Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And on today's episode, we enjoy a double feature from the great horror auteur Ty West, Pearl and X. We debate the effectiveness of Pearl's warped character study in the first film and explore the depths of the latter's sociological observations. All in all, it's a bloody good time.
Have I ever told you about the time that I saved a kid from an alligator?
Is this a real story?
This is a real story. This is not like me pulling your leg.
Okay. You have A, not told me about it, and B, I would love to hear about it because this sounds like a wonderful intro to this episode.
All right. So I was 7 years old and I was driving with my parents I was seven.
I gotta stop you right now. I'm just gonna put this in front of the story. I feel like there's no way you save somebody from an alligator at 7 years old. you're exaggerating a little bit, but keep going.
I guarantee you. But you also sound exactly like my classmates back in the first grade when I told them that I saved a kid from an alligator.
So
we're driving down to Disney World, which at the time I kept telling people Disneyland because, you know, I had a speech impediment as a kid where I couldn't say my R's.
Right.
So if I tried to say world, I would say wild.
I understand that because I have a lisp and S's are tough for me.
Yeah, so you just have, you're kind of like, can I just say Disneyland? And people would be like, you went to California, and then I'd have to say Florida, and that was the whole.
And I would say Disneyland, and they were like, that's not a place.
The struggles of youth. Mm. So we are going down there, but along the way, we decided to stop at Gatorland.
Wait, where is this, in Florida?
This is in Florida. Where else would Gatorland
be? That was a really stupid question, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Gatorland. So I wanted to see some alligators. I wanted to see some snakes.
Are you
Gatorland,
a fan?
Promise both. Yeah.
Yeah, you're Jurassic Park, you know.
Yeah, I find them fascinating.
Okay.
Terrified, but also fascinating.
Do you know the difference between an alligator and a crocodile? Just, you know, a little bit of education for our listeners before we get into this.
Is it at the snout?
Something to do, yeah, with like their one of their heads are bigger or some shit.
Yeah, I think it's crocodile, or maybe alligator has the wider head and crocodile has a more narrow head.
Yeah, there you go. See, we know all about it.
But we get to this park and it's a swamp or like a lake, a body of water that has wooden bridges built on top of it. So you're on this wooden walkway over water and you can look down over the railing at any point and you're just looking down at water that's filled with alligators.
Yeah.
And so they have some exhibit. There was a pit in the far back that had a bunch of snakes in it.
Do you have to sign a waiver or something before you go out in these bridges?
You might.
Okay.
I imagine you might. So we saw a demonstration where this one of the people that worked there, of course, held a chicken on a pole. Not a live chicken.
I thought you were going to say a goose or a duck.
No. I mean, maybe. You know, seven-year-old me, I assume chicken, but... like uncooked chicken just on a pole over the water, and he would lower it and you'd see the gators kind of circle up and then he would dip into the water and rise it up real fast and the gators would jump up after this chicken. So it was very dramatic.
Did they get the chicken? Cool.
Eventually he would lower it and let them get it and throw in some more food for the ones that couldn't get to the chicken. But this was a thing to where they actively got these alligators to pay attention to what was hanging over the railing, right? Whether it's chicken or people, I think you could buy things to throw to the gators, like little fish or something. But we were waiting in line to get on the trolley that went around the entire park.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just do like a nice tour and see all the gators and see different things.
Right.
And we're waiting in this line and we're a few people from the front. And it's me and my dad standing there. My mom was doing something. And there's two women behind us who are deep in conversation, moms, and one little kid who's standing behind the woman. I'm seven. This kid had to be like 4 or 5, like definitely younger than me.
Right.
And he's wearing overalls, like Oshkosh Bagosh overalls.
Yeah, Mia Goth style.
Yeah, of course. Very, very, very Pearl-like. And so, or not even Pearl.
No, Pearl wears overalls, doesn't she? When she's going out to the, that's when she stabs the duck, I believe.
Okay. Pearl and Maxine.
Yeah,
you know? I feel both like of them in their overalls.
You know, that's a thread that goes between the movies, but we can get into that later.
Absolutely. So this kid, how the railing was, you had the wooden slats, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then on the upper part, it was a flat piece of wood. So you could comfortably like rest an elbow on it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wide, like the width of your hand kind of thing. So you could put a drink on it and you could
sure.
you know, lean on it. But it also had a cross plank on the bottom at the base to where the vertical planks kind of went into. So this kid stood up on the lowest plank, on the horizontal one at the bottom
yeah.
and got a pretty good like step up. And then he used his elbows to lift himself to where his waist was now at the top of the railing because he wanted to look over and see if he could see the alligators.
You've told this story so many times.
Can you just tell from how I'm
so
telling it?
So detailed. Well, I don't remember anything from when I was 7 years old, and you know, like, minute details.
Yeah, this is just burned into my mind because I was just
I
looking
guess,
at him.
Yeah.
I was watching him do this, and I kind of tap my dad on the shoulder, and I point to the kid, because the kid's now completely on his stomach, on the top of the railing, looking over the railing.
And an alligator slowly coming towards him?
That's exactly what happened.
Really?
I stood up on the bottom rail so I could see what he was looking at, and you see, like, four alligators kind of swim over and just kind of circle up where he would land. And he starts reaching for the alligators.
Oof. And the parents weren't watching him.
They're not watching. They're just talking.
I've never seen anything like that. That's crazy.
You've never seen
parents not watching their
be
kids.
Be distracted. Crazy.
I see it constantly, so, by the way, because now I have a kid and all I am is surrounded by people not watching their kids.
You're hyper aware of it?
I'm at least watching.
So his legs just go from horizontal to like 11 o'clock and he starts to kind of like tilt too far, so I reached over and grabbed the back of his overalls and kind of like held him or like balanced him back, and as I was still holding on to his overalls I said, "Hey lady." And the woman looked, yelled and grabbed her kid and ran off.
Yeah.
And me being the arrogant only child that I was, I yelled, "You're welcome." And that was how I saved a kid from alligators.
That's okay. So you weren't exaggerating.
I don't think so. I had multiple people tell me that never happened.
We have people who can corroborate this story?
No.
Because I might do a story. I might write an article on this, and I'm going to need some sources.
Unless that kid happens to be listening to this podcast right now.
Oh, man. If you could find that kid.
Well, if my dad was still around, I could ask him.
Oh, man. If you ever... I mean, do you think you would recognize this person if you ever saw him?
No, absolutely not.
You sure? There might be like an electric connection might suddenly form between you. And be like, oh, my God, you're him.
Right. It's kind of a... kind of like Chungking Express, where you just like happen to bump shoulders with somebody. Not even Chungking, Unbreakable.
Yeah, right.
You bump shoulders and it flashes to like some part of that person's life.
If you ever meet this guy, you have to watch, you need to do a double feature and watch Pearl and X together.
I know. I should try posting to Reddit's just like long shot, but was anybody ever saved
should.
From falling into an alligator? alligator group.
Yeah.
At Gatorland.
Oh man, those alligators were salivating. They were like, guys, like this never happens. Like, please let this kid fall in.
I did tell that story on Reddit one time, and the only response I got was, and then everybody clapped, right?
Slow clap.
I was like, it does sound like one of those stories. It does.
Okay.
Anyway.
Ex-Pearl.
Alligators. Yeah. Pearl and
Pearl X. I guess chronological order is X-Pearl, but if we're going narrative order, it'd be Pearl X.
Yeah. Which, you watched X first, right?
Yeah, did you watch Pearl first?
I watched Pearl first.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah, I watched X when it came out because I'm a huge Ty West fan. Always have been. House of the Devil and The Innkeepers are classics. Classic horror movies. I especially love the... I have more of a history with House of the Devil. I have a group of friends who really love that movie, and I just think it's just like kind of a perfect movie and for what it is. It's a really like... dialogueless movie. It's just about this babysitter in a house, and you're just watching her kind of roam around the house, and she has no idea what's going on in there, and you as a viewer don't even know, like, you have no idea what's going on in there until the very end. It's just like, it's really masterfully done in how it's and how it moves and flows and teases like what the horror is. But then I watched The Innkeepers recently, and that one really stuck out to me. Like, that to me has aged perfectly and is such a great intimate character study of somebody who like is looking to live their life but like is too scared to like step out of their comfort zone and is stuck in this hotel that's aging. It's going to close down, and there are these ghosts there, and this ghost, she shares this connection with this ghost, and she wants to learn about this ghost, and hopefully like if she can like speak to these ghosts, like she can like connect to something deeper, and this ghost can help her like work through. It's just like everything about it's so perfectly done. Like those to me are just such classic that I'm just a bona fide Ty West fan, and I'm always up for anything he makes. So like when X came out, it was his return to horror movies, and I was like, I'm in.
Yeah, I don't have a large Ty West background. I first heard of him because you were such a fan.
Yeah.
And in 2013, we were at the Toronto Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually got to go to, I think it was a little event that Canon did that was supposed to be for more industry people. And we attended because it was Ty West and who's the bear Jew again?
Eli Roth.
Yeah, Eli Roth.
You could say that giving a talk. Jewish.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know.
And it is his name in the movie.
Yeah. But it was them two talking, and we're just like, awesome. Oh, so Travis gets to go listen to Ty West talk about filmmaking.
I was very excited.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot of the details. I remember it being interesting, and both of them, like, we had good seats. Did you get to ask Ty West a question?
Yeah, you forced me to talk to Ty West at one point, which, yeah. And I don't know, I never know what to say in those situations. I'm always just like, you're awesome, like, good job. But I do remember the little Q&A. Like, Ty West is a very, like, calm, relaxing, and, like, gives, like, a concise answer, you know? Like, he's a film nerd and just kind of, like, talks about, like, loving movies. And, like, Eli Roth jumps in and, like, jazzes it up. And he's like, oh, yeah, Ty West isn't telling you, like, this, this, and that. Like, you wouldn't have believed how crazy it was, you know? It was just a great dynamic.
Yeah, Eli's big guy energy was definitely...
Yeah.
Yeah, the charisma was just, it made for a good rapport between them.
Yeah, and at that festival, I would say Eli Roth's movie was better than Ty West, and I say that as a huge Ty West fan.
Yeah, Green Inferno versus The Sacrament.
Yeah, which The Sacrament, you know, it has its moments, but it's maybe the only Ty West movie I can think of that is kind of a miss.
I mean, that was my first Ty West movie.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated because I like found footage films.
Mm-hmm.
So I was excited by some of the things that it was doing. My problem with The Sacrament was the same problem that I had with Pearl, which was the second Ty West movie that I ever watched, was that from the very beginning, because of the genre, and we've talked about this before and having some different feelings on this, because of the genre, I felt like I knew everything that was going to happen in The Sacrament.
Yeah, right.
you learn about a cult and then you go there and it seems normal at first and then it gets weirder and then it goes bad with the cult either trying to kill the people or kill themselves. It's just every cult movie does the same exact thing, which is pretty annoying. Mm-hmm. But and then Pearl, I felt kind of fast forwarding into that now.
Sure.
Was very similar in the sense that immediately from the first scene where you have the tension between the mother and the daughter and you realize that Pearl's in this restrictive home and mm-hmm. wants to break out, that it's essentially just going to be a plot where she murders her parents and like is free
right.
or turns violent and breaks out. So I was hoping it was going to do more than that. And then it just did all the beats that I kind of expected. I mean, you don't expect her to like dry hump a scarecrow. That's unexpected. But everything else is just like every character you meet is probably going to die. And it's just I felt like I was on a linear roller coaster and nothing too exciting was happening.
Yeah.
It was just going along for the ride.
We've definitely had these discussions before. And I do think genre is the root, the connection between a lot of these. Like I remember you saying once, like you had trouble with Westerns because they all are so similar and follow the same beats. And I completely understand that. Like when it comes to, I just think genre is a specific type of movie and inspires a specific type of fan where like you kind of have to be okay with that. You have to be accepting of the tropes. And I think a movie that follows too many tropes in a kind of boring way, it is a bad thing. Like, that's how I felt about Five Nights at Freddy's. Five Nights at Freddy's, yeah. Like, to me, like, it just did all these things, and I'm like, I've seen this before. And it was less to do with, like, the structure of the movie and, like, the beats, but more of, like, how those beats were handled. Like, oh, of course, his daughter or his sister is, like, this alien kid, and it's supposed to be bringing in the sympathy factor, and you're supposed to look at her in a certain way. Like when stuff like that happens and characters are reduced to like archetypes and don't feel full bodied, like I have problems with that. And when the story beats aren't taking typical themes we see into new territory, like, yeah, that's all like, to me, that's where genre can get really bogged down to become like the most boring kind of movie to watch. But I agree with you about The Sacrament in the sense that I don't mind that if it's a found footage movie that feels familiar structurally. I'm more concerned like where does it go with the formula? And I do think Ty West did some cool stuff as far as the meta factor in The Sacrament. But also when it comes to found footage films, like that is a pretty common thing to do, like play with the meta elements and like what you're watching and, you know, what movie you're a part of and place of perspective, like that's all pretty typical. And in that sense, I didn't feel like The Sacrament really differentiated itself enough, and it did feel familiar in a kind of boring way. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that way about Pearl though. I just watched Pearl for the first time for whatever reason. I hadn't seen it yet. I think the mystique of Ty West, like, I was just so drawn to X because it was like, oh, Ty West's first horror movie in years since The Sacrament, which was, like, kind of disappointing. Like, I was so excited for it that, like, the allure of Pearl, like, kind of wore quickly. I was like, like, two at once? Like, ugh, like, can I just get one every couple years? Like, I don't know. There was just something about it. Like, I wasn't as attracted to it like I was X. So watching it now for the first time, I was pretty surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I kind of expected to not like it nearly as much. And I do think X is a better movie, although I think X is fucking awesome and like better than most movies anyway.
Yeah.
But Pearl, it is a genre affair in the sense that it's like, it's kind of cheeky in its meta-ness, you know, playing with like the old timey movie formula, like the Wizard of Oz kind of thing, fantasy versus reality, blah, blah, blah. And it followed a lot of genre beats. And yeah, you're right. Like every person you meet, like, of course, like they're going to die, blah, blah, blah. Like it kind of goes through all those familiar things. But I think it has enough moments that make it stand out, and we'll get into all that, but I think it just has enough moments to make it stand out, and it to me, it transcends the genre formula.
What are some of those moments?
I would think, well, I will say, immediately when the movie started, I was a little wary, because like it was doing the whole thing of like, Pearl's in a movie, like she thinks she's in a movie, and to me it felt a little bit like a novelty act, kind of. Like it was just cheeky for cheeky's sake. And like the whole thing was just going to be a joke. And I'm like, haha, she thinks she's in a movie the whole time. But it was the movie's ability to constantly break out of that and to have like reality consume her and kind of imprison her and really put these walls around her. The ways in which Ty West did that to me, like, again, like I think I'm just not into a movie that has this sort of novelty formula as much. So like, I don't think I like it as much as X, but the moments where you see her really struggling with reality, like to me, are the winning moments of this movie. I think especially the scene where Pearl is pretending that her sister-in-law is Howard and going through like everything she feels and her inability to like deal with the world she's in and the life she wasn't allowed to lead. I just think there are so many moments like that that feel powerful and real and visceral enough that like, oh, it isn't, this movie isn't just like purely a novelty act. Like anytime she's escaping into this fantasy world, it's meant to highlight just how dark and grim her real world is. So I just thought the tension between those two elements and how different the fantasy and real worlds were, to an almost comical degree, like anytime she was in a fantasy world, like it was completely ridiculous. I don't think movies do that kind of thing enough, and I really appreciated the energy that was giving off.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I get that. There is like the aesthetic, the style, that tonal, like the purposeful tonal clash.
Yeah.
It does give it like a refreshing energy about it, which is cool and unique and comical in a lot of ways, despite how serious the movie is. There is something so over the top about it that you almost want to laugh more than, especially in relation to X. As even though X is funny, it's just like Pearl is just so much more over the top. I think my complaint was just on some of the scene by scene level. It was more of just like, is that the most interesting thing? Is that the most interesting thing? Is that like a little more of what's expected? Where X, I felt like, was constantly just doing all the things that make me go like, hell yes, fuck yeah, like this is fantastic. I now sound like Kid Cudi in the movie. But it felt so much more inventive to me and playful, and I can't tell if that's just because the way in which Pearl is being inventive and playful didn't land for me, or if Pearl was more simple.
I know what you mean. It is a little, and I think that was my big hiccup for a while. Again, like I appreciated it more as like a genre affair and it kind of existing in what it is and being playful of the formula, but it's a little simple in the sense that just compared to X, like if it wasn't paired with X, I don't know how I would feel about this movie. Actually, I feel like they're very good companion pieces. I feel like a lot of what's interesting about Pearl is just because X exists, which maybe is a detriment to Pearl, because on its own, it is just kind of about, it's not just about one thing, but it's about one thing in the sense that it's a character study more than what X is, which X is more of like a sociological commentary, you know, like it really blows up and has different characters that represent different facets of America. And there's like this gap between generations and the direction America is heading. Like it just opens itself up a little bit more, which can be a bad thing. And a lot of movies fumble, but like in X, it works perfectly. Pearl's like, it's satisfied for being with what it is. And again, I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, I think it's a very good character study, and that's what makes this movie cool. It's a great setup for X in the sense of like, you just learn who this crazy woman is. But it doesn't feel as expansive, and it just flat out doesn't feel like it's saying as much, I guess, like in a broader sense.
Yeah, that's what kind of struck me. It was flat. And I mm-hmm. think of, that's what surprised me so much about X, was how many dimensions it had and how full it felt, how alive it felt. And even going back to Pearl for this, having like watched X again, so now it's like two and two. I still didn't, I mean, there's something to the idea that you get introduced to like the rise, like the first like pornographic film being this like under mm-hmm. unknown thing that's just shown behind the scenes that people like whisper about and have some access to, and kind of some of the ways of the world at that point. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel as thematically empowered. It feels more so just a byproduct of the setting, which I don't know if it's developed enough to have that same power that you get just from the commentary on TV in X. And some people might like that better. They feel like it's a little less like beating you over the head with it.
Right.
But it just felt a little strange. I think the strangest thing to me about X or Pearl, and the thing that frustrates me the most, is Howard's return. And really, like, I love the last shot of her face and how much she's amazing. Trying. But blink. I also doesn't, not at all. But I hate the fact that Howard's character in return is given such little time for process.
Yeah.
Especially, it's one thing if it's just like the end of a standalone movie. But knowing that he sticks around in X, like, we're told that he thought she was perfect, amazing. But would he really? What went on? Who is he that he walks into that room, has that initial reaction and decides to stay, and that it's good and fine? And not only that, he's going to eventually, some years down the road, like, dive into it with her. It felt like a major piece of the story is lacking. And I really wish the character, like, if you would have had what was the entire movie be the first half of the movie, and dive into a bit more of Howard's return, and you get like 20 to 30 minutes of them kind of like going through the fallout of everything she did, I would like that a lot.
Yeah,
more.
Right. Yeah, Chris, while I was watching this movie, I feel like that was part of my experience of watching Pearl, is like, I'm noting all the things I know Chris won't like. And like, that to me was definitely a thing of like, because, you know, as you go on in the movie, like, I keep thinking like, well, Howard's going to show up. Like, he's part of X. He's going to have a story in this. And you realize at the end, he's not really going to have one. He just shows up and he's there. And I was thinking like, Chris is not going to like that. He needs some he needs these two to have some time together. He needs some setup. I personally don't think that matters. I'm not going to go as far to say it doesn't matter at all, in the sense that like, if they did it and did it well, like, that'd be great. And I think it could enrich X, but I don't think it's necessary, especially for what Pearl is doing specifically. Because when I think about X and what it's about, I mean, it is about it's about a lot thematically, and sociologically, you know, like, it's covering a lot of ground about America and generations, and like, and Howard and Pearl are a big part of that. But when it comes down to it, I think what makes X work is its central character of Maxine and the connection she has with Pearl. And I feel like that's the purpose Pearl serves more, is setting up the connection they share and what their connection says about all of the themes in X and what ultimately this trilogy will end up being about. Adding a story in there for Howard, like, again, could enrich all that, but not necessary in the sense that, like, I don't think it detracts from what the movie's doing, IMO.
Yeah, I definitely don't think a story for Howard's needed, especially as you're noting that Pearl being a foil for Maxine is one of the key reasons to do the movie. Mm-hmm. The only reason to do the movie, really. But it's more of, I guess, we've seen so much of what Pearl wanted and needed at that point and thought she wanted and needed without Howard there. Mm-hmm. Now that he's back, I'd be more curious to see what the process of settling down is like for her and why she's giving up a lot of that for Howard, and his response to that doesn't need to essentially be like a storyline, but I'm curious about how any normal person rationalizes that. And so just having like a little bit more to it, I think would have gone a long way. And I didn't even know he was a character in X when I saw the movie for the first time. So it was more of something where my big problem with a lot of movies is the third act feeling like it ends when it's just starting and needing or should having just a little bit more to it to really like round things out. And that doesn't mean being obvious with everything or, you know, putting an exclamation point on all the themes and story points. You can have open-endedness still, but I think there was just a little bit more work for the film to do. And then when I saw X, I especially felt that way, but
interesting.
Should we talk a little bit more about X then?
Yeah, I could have done a whole episode on X.
Yeah, X is staggeringly good, and
yeah, it's great.
That's the thing that jumps out to me, because it's very genre laden, but there's so much that's going on thematically, sociologically, meta commentary. I know it's cliche at this point to have meta aspects be about filmmaking, but this is just such a cool way of going about it. And the idea of the elevation of a genre and the techniques that take something from just a genre thing or just a smut film into something that's a little more artistic, and how the movie both seems to be practicing that while also maybe like doing the fake like jerk off hand gesture to that guy.
Yeah, right.
It kind of has its cake and eats it too in terms of like being critical but also embracing that very thing. And that moment when Pearl's killing him and the blood splatters on the light, and they had just talked about Psycho and it being a movie that has like the change in genre halfway through, and having that light turn red and be cast on Pearl as she's killing him, and then she does the dance and it does its full transition to this like artsy horror movie.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's why I love movies.
I think what makes X work, and again, I really like Pearl, but kind of makes me realize what Pearl isn't doing. Because Pearl certainly has the meta aspects, you know, it's glaringly obvious that it does. It's not trying to hide it in the way that I think X kind of is. X isn't necessarily hiding it, but it's much more part of the DNA of the movie, as opposed to where Pearl, it's like, isn't this a big joke, you know? Where X, that's what I love about it, is it feels very loving in its ode to filmmaking and the power of filmmaking. You know, the movie's very Boogie Nights-esque, and like these a bunch of people get together and are like, porn can be art, like, let's make art. And just there from the get-go, it's kind of this loving nod to old pornographic movies and pink films that even back then and still to this day, get a bad rap. People look down on, don't consider it true art, when really those kinds of movies, and I do have a few of them, I actually have some of them on 4K, which is pretty dope to see. like, it's, I mean, they're the most artistic of any movie. Like, they're really going for it and, like, really pronouncing, like, the artistic intentions and, like, what the sex means in relation to the characters and, like, what all of this is saying. Like, it's such a... It's so almost aggravatingly, like, open in that way that there's something very loving about it and endearing about it to see these people just, like, really going for it. And I think X really captures that. Like, these people, what they're doing, why they're there, what they're making together. Like, they're creating something bigger. Like, yeah, for the producer, it is about making money. But, like, for the director, for the people making the movie, it's about something more. Like, capturing something real and visceral. So you have these people within the movie making that movie. And then you have a movie evaluating those people making the movie and people judging them for making that movie. And... It just kind of all coalesces in a way, especially if the way that the movie's shot, like it, the best part, not the best part, but an awesome part of this movie is it starts with the shot of the house from inside the barn. And it has, and because the barn kind of has the outsides of the frame in shadow, it looks like you're looking at a 1:37 ratio, aspect ratio, which is like an old way movies were shot. And then as it zooms in, you get a very modern 1:90 aspect ratio. And you see this, suddenly you realize, like, oh, you're watching, you've gone from, like, this typical movie format to the way the human eye sees the field of vision, like a 1:90. And it very, right from the very beginning, it's mixing those energies. It's announcing its meta-ness. While then you step into this world where, like, people are making movies and trying to make their movies say something while you're watching a movie. Talk about those things and is also saying something. It just has so many layers from the very beginning that Pearl, it feels more ham-fisted, I guess, in Pearl. Like, it really, like, Pearl, like, screams it at you, whereas X, you, like, kind of slowly realize what it's doing, you know?
Yeah, there is, like, a cool, I don't know, I like build up to that and of that as it's slowly introduced through the formal aspects, like you're saying. I mean, it's not even, it's right away introduced through the formal aspects, but it's slowly confirmed through the dialogue and everything else that's happening. And you start to see it kind of ramping up till it becomes more of a major part of everything, especially as you find out more about Maxine herself and wanting to be a star and that kind of that commentary on, okay, this is larger, not just about filmmaking, but the influence as well of film on people, especially as we're seeing with the TVs all over that place playing all of Maxine's dad's, like, preacher stuff.
Yeah, right.
And how intense a lot of that is and the effect that it's having seemingly on the people around and the public in general. And getting them to agree with him while also you could imagine being the reason why Maxine left in the first place is that she grew up in such a harsh environment that's similar in ways to which Pearl grew up, but a very different, version of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was one thing I really noticed. Pearl really made me think about, because obviously it's a part of X, because you realize at the end of the movie that the preacher, the crazy preacher on TV, is just Maxine's dad. And Maxine's dad is worried about Maxine and this world she's entered into. The movies have a very interesting look at, and I'm saying this as a new parent, at how parents parent their children and the kind of effect it can have on them. Especially in Pearl, it was one of the, to me, the most just fascinating aspects of the movie is Pearl is this way largely because of her parents and what they didn't allow her to become. My wife's been reading this book and she's been relaying to me like stuff she learns from it as she reads it. But there's this whole section. It's a book about raising kids and there's this whole section on punishment and how it uses like society as an example and how society has never once, it seems like in the history of mankind, we've never learned this lesson, handled punishment correctly. You know, you see it in America, like the whole prison system, it's really set up like if you do something bad, bad boy, go here, like go sit in here for a while and think about what you did, which when you ostensibly you think about what punishment is and like the value of it, you would think like you're trying to cure somebody, you're trying to
rehabilitate.
You're trying to, yeah, basically like the best way to handle it in the end, as we found out just through research and studying how these things work, is like you don't just tell people they're bad, you don't restrict, you don't demean, you highlight the good things. You say like, you did this, but like you should have done this. Like you're such a kind, loving person when you do this, this, and this. Like, why did you do this? Like there's a better way to handle coaxing someone in the proper direction. That's a big part of it, is kind of like embracing things about somebody and the way they are and like what they want to do. And if you take that away from somebody, like you're not curing anything, you know, you're not setting them in a better direction. You're just containing them. And that's all that's happening to Pearl here, is like, she's not being allowed to even like attempt to reach her dreams. And the more and more she's imprisoned, the more she becomes trapped in this fantasy world and yearns for something that isn't real. Like, that's what drives her crazy. I just think it's such a cool way of looking at like proper parenting, you know?
It does play like a major role, this influence of parents on children, and then how that then resonates out through, I mean, in Pearl's case, it resonates through just her small little network. But in Maxine's case, we're seeing it resonate out through on a much more cultural level, as yes, the things her dad preaching are the kind of things that a lot of people were talking about, especially in response. It's the 60s, you know, it's 70s in X.
Yeah, they're in the 70s.
Yeah, 79. We're like coming out of a lot of the like the hippie era at that mm-hmm. point. And you've had this like free love movement, you're having a lot of culture shifts that are going on. And that restriction that was present throughout society is now being met with this new generation saying like, hey, we don't want these restrictions.
Yeah.
And Maxine's kind of embodying, the entire group's embodying that movement. And that's what makes X so fascinating to me.
Right.
Because you have Howard and Pearl who, I mean, they don't necessarily like the sexual aspects of it, but they do, right? They have this fire in them that's been stamped out due to their age, but also due to, you can imagine, some societal aspects that have influenced them, when really they still want to feel alive and young and capture these aspects of themselves that they no longer have access to or that they felt denied in their lifetime. And seeing these young people come through, be sexual, be in their prime, is such a triggering thing for them mm-hmm. that they end up rediscovering their own passion and their own youthfulness by murdering them.
Yeah, right.
Which ends up leading to them actually having sex for the first time in a long time and feeling this passion and connection. And it's such an interesting commentary on age and on restriction, and seeing some of the idea that they were kids that were rebelling in some ways against society and ended up stamping that out. And now they're rediscovering it through the youth movement that's doing this, even though they're the ones that are also like squashing this youth movement. There's a lot of really fascinating psychological and philosophical takeaways from that I don't think are all intentional. But if you just start looking at it from more of an analytical way of seeing some of the, not just the irony in the behavior of Howard and Pearl, but the hypocrisy mm-hmm. in Howard and Pearl, and some of that, like, don't do what I do what I say aspect yeah. of who they are, And you can extrapolate that from the very like real things. It's not in the movie, of course, it's murder and that's bad, but the thematic stuff of what that actually represents and the way in which older generations try to shut down younger generations when the older generation just wants the thing that the younger generation has.
Right.
Is, I think, something we've all experienced at a point in time in our lives. And then something that we all kind of become at a point in our lives. I just turned 37. I know there's some things I look at in the generation below us, right? I remember being a millennial in college and hearing all the Gen Xers and whatever was before Gen X be like, oh, these millennials, millennials this, millennials that. And now I'm the millennial being like, these Zoomers, Zoomer this, Zoomer that. I don't like some of the things that Zoomers are doing. And I'm sure I felt the same way about like Gen X when I was a millennial being like, ah, these people complaining, like, you don't know what I know.
So yeah.
There's a very like holistic cyclical dynamic that's going on with the characters in this movie that's so good, especially as it feels like who the main character is between Maxine and between Pearl kind of flip-flops at times. Like, is this a movie about Pearl and Howard recapturing their passion through these visitors that come to their farm? Or is it a movie about Maxine's like youth and empowerment and breaking away from these people that would otherwise like do to her what society did to them?
It's all the above.
Yeah.
That's what makes X so good. Yeah, I agree. That was something I think Pearl adds to X and kind of strengthens is how Pearl and Howard and X are acting similar to the way Pearl's mother acts in Pearl. And it, you're right. It's this sort of generational tug and pull that constantly seems to happen. And I mean, I've definitely seen it. You know, I interact with a lot of older people, both when I like go with my daughter to stuff and like, you know, there are grandparents there with their kids or just, you know, the relatives in my life. Like, I see it all the time. There is this frustration sort of that seems to always come out about like what we have now and like what they didn't have, the way you're supposed to act and the way you shouldn't have act. There's just something that always seems to happen generationally where there's a bit of a grudge on people's shoulders. And a lot of that has to do with like someone's inability to be in touch with themselves and fit themselves into this bigger societal puzzle and realize like what makes them happy as opposed to like what other people have, and not looking at it as like a contest, but more of like how you fit into something and being okay with change, being okay with things moving forward, being okay with like the world opening up and someone being able to move off the farm and go pursue a dance career, even if that's ridiculous and there's no way they'll ever make it. Like, it's a good thing to try that. And you can't really get there unless you become more open and become more connected and are kinder to yourself and are able to realize someone's ambition. Like, I could see all of those wheels turning in Pearl and like kind of fueling a lot of what's happening in X. Like, all these things you're saying about Howard and Pearl's characters as people who are now so old that they can barely do anything. Like, what are they going through psychologically? Like, what is pushing them to the brink of like where they are now and they're killing these kids? I do think Pearl like adds that layer to the movies and opens it up a little bit.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Yeah, there's definitely, it brings some more of the full circleness to it of Pearl has become in some ways her mom. And Maxine's killing of Pearl is in some ways, especially if you view them as like spiritual successors, or even it's weird to think of it in reincarnation when the one's still alive.
Yeah.
But there's something about Maxine getting to do what Pearl never got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the killing of Pearl as representative of stepping over that hurdle that Pearl never could.
Yeah, because Maxine actually left home.
Yeah, right? Like, she got away. She did it. And then she runs into this kind of, like, past version of herself.
Yeah.
Or it could be, I mean, Pearl straight up says to her, right? Like, you're going to become me.
Something like that, yeah.
like I am you. There's some, like, connection about what will happen to Maxine.
Mm-hmm.
So... there's also something, too, about the fact that this is reaching a little bit more. I don't have this fully thought out, but it was just kind of thinking that what would have happened to Pearl if Howard hadn't come home? Would she have stayed on the farm? Would she, out of necessity, had to have left the farm and gone elsewhere? Wherefore, Maxine, at the end, Wayne, who seemed to be was her partner, like... they were engaged, taking care of her, is now gone. Is there a world in which Maxine would have settled with Wayne the same way that Pearl settled with Howard? And in some ways, like, Pearl and Howard getting rid of Wayne plays in thematically to, like, Maxine's freedom.
Right.
And going out into the world now on her own, you know, with a loss of innocence, having had this farm experience, it's weird to think of a porn star as having like a loss of innocence story, but
yeah, but it
there
totally
is something kind of like they were on the small time doing this thing and all this shit happens and it's going to make it to where Maxine just, I'm sure, has like no fucks to give anymore.
Right.
And comes out the other side very emboldened, very empowered. And we'll see what happens in the next movie.
Pearl did make me think, like, it's the closest Ty West has come to, because all of his movies are very contained, but Pearl, like, Pearl kills as a youth and she lives many more years. I think we have a franchise in our hands. She can kill lots of people between Pearl and X.
Yeah, they can go back and do some little Pearl spinoffs, right?
For sure. I would love that, by the way. I just think Mia Goth is, she's electric. Like, again, that scene where she's just confessing everything she did and how she feels to her sister-in-law, like, it's an incredible piece of acting. To pull something like that off, to go through all of the different rhythms and energy changes that she does, it's crazy.
Yeah, she's a special talent.
And she was, I think, was X her first movie? I don't know if it was her first movie, but she was pretty unknown before that.
Mia Goth?
Yeah.
Nymphomaniac was her first movie.
Yeah, you're right. She's in that, but she doesn't have a big part in that movie.
No, she had like a little bit in
Oh,
a
she did
for
several
wellness.
Movies. Yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, Suspiria, High Life.
Oh, that's right. I see. I never saw Suspiria, so I probably would have known her from that.
Yeah, I mean, she's not...
You're right. She's done not, quite a bit. I shouldn't have said that. That's offensive. I said an offensive thing.
Yeah, how dare you? I mean, she's I know that there was like a big deal when her and Shia LaBeouf first started dating. I believe they're married now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were together 2012 to 2018, broke up for a little bit and got back together in 2020.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So she's been busy. But I do think, I mean, some of the things she had done, it's really like 2022, 2023 with X Pearl and Infinity Pool that I think a larger audience has started to pay attention to just how special she is, because those three roles were so demanded so much range and were so exhibitive. I mean, Nymphomaniac, I've never seen Nymphomaniac. I imagine her role in that is also exhibitive.
Yeah.
But there's so much in terms of confidence and sensuality and openness and nakedness emotionally and physically in X Pearl and Infinity Pool that it's definitely elevated her name and reputation and recognition as a movie star beyond some of the smaller roles or side roles she's had up to this point.
I'm reading through Nymphomaniac. I remember who she is now. I love that movie, so I feel bad for not remembering her. It's a long movie, though. You know, there's a lot to remember.
Yeah. What's cool about this setup, I said Maxine, but I want to talk about Pearl, is that because you have the time jump, I started to say gap and jump and said gump at first.
Oh, are you a Bubba Gump fan?
Bubba Gump? What's that?
You've never been to Bubba Gump's? The shrimp place that was...
Oh,
yeah.
No, I hate Forrest Gump. I don't like Forrest Gump. I have never liked it. I thought it was a cheesy movie.
Forrest Gump? Well, yeah. I've went through a period of my life where I was like, Forrest Gump sucks. But now I kind of want to watch it again. And maybe as an old man, I'd be like, it's all right.
If it registered as anything more than all right, I'd be concerned. Maybe you'll love it now, though. You've gotten soft.
Yeah, I really
do. But the fact that you establish Pearl as Mia Goth, you know, at age 29, 28, whenever they filmed it, she's 30 now. And then you have X, where it's not even Mia Goth playing Pearl at that point, right?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Oh, yeah. It's still Mia Goth playing Pearl.
Tour de force.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
She's the best.
I was looking at her face, and I was like, that's not Mia Goth, right? But makeup. Makeup artists.
Hey, so, that's not Mia Goth. That old woman isn't her.
You can, like, every few years just do an intermediary Pearl movie where Mia Goth gets older, and that fits because she's aging into...
They should.
Pearl from X. So you could do one every, like, 10 years.
Absolutely, they should.
That would be awesome.
Ty West. We'll talk about it on this show. If anything, we'll get Ty West to do it. Like, we'll talk about it on the show.
And so I'm excited for Maxine. I feel like, you know,
fuck yeah,
there are a trilogy of films. We're going to have to see the third one to kind of bring it all together. But I'm very excited for it. And I was so impressed with Ty West's, like, patience, his range, everything that he did in this movie. I think this is the best Kid Cudi, like, role or character in a movie. There's just something, too, especially when he's talking with Howard.
Yeah.
And
love it.
Embodying that confidence and soldier out in the darkness. It was just very different from the kind of characters I feel like I typically see him play.
Yeah.
And then Brittany Snow is stealing every scene.
She's amazing. Wow. I mean, I knew her from movies and stuff, but I don't think I ever realized how awesome she is. I don't know.
You were going to say something about Cudi?
I just, this movie, X, that's the other thing about X. Like, Pearl's great. I really enjoy it. But X just has so many scenes that are so fucking awesome. Like, the scene where Kid Cudi's character, I don't know why I can't remember his name. I can probably just pull it up here really quick. Jackson Hole. Jackson Hole. What a kick-ass porn name. Like, him and Howard are, like, wandering through the swamp area. Like, great scene. The part where Wayne is in the barn, you know, and gets killed, like, through the little eye hole. There are just so many scenes in the movie that are so well done. And even, like, little things like RJ, like, crying in the shower. Like, these little character beats that you learn so much about each of these characters, even though, like, not a lot of time is spent with them. it's just it's a joy of a movie to watch. Like, it's the kind of movie I could watch over and over, where like Pearl, like I kind of watched it and I got it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's that one dimensional. It doesn't mean like aesthetically it wouldn't be pleasing, or there's not moments that
right.
like the performances throughout Pearl are phenomenal, but there's just not the same narrative range that makes like just RJ and Lorraine's relationship so fascinating in the movie, and him setting himself up for for doom when he says to her, it's just a movie.
Yeah.
And then she says she wants to like be in the movie, and he freaks out about it. That's such a great moment too, because it gets into that whole theme that we're talking about the power of film and the impact that these things have, to where like it's just a movie, except it's not, right? Like the thing the preacher's saying on TV, it's not just a thing that a preacher's saying on TV. It has a real impact on people and has a real world influence on things, and that can get very personal in some ways.
Yeah, right. You want to go over favorite movies moments in the movie, because I have some picked out.
Yeah, favorite in Pearl is definitely her face at the end of the long hold on
that is pretty amazing, like not blinking. It's just like, I don't know, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I really liked that part a lot, and I like when movie dude comes to her house and they've been having the projectionist. They have been having such a picturesque, I mean, not really picturesque. There was still something kind of like...
In her mind, it was like, you know, the fish islands and everything.
Yeah, there's still something seedy about his behavior, but he's so like clean cut and put together that you kind of think that he's going to... I don't know. There's just something that embodies everything about what she's looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And when he arrives at her house and you have that picturesque farm and he sees the pig that's still on the front porch.
The pig was great.
That was really awesome.
Yeah.
And just his slow rising horror was really good. But on X, it has to be, I think it's one of, I don't want to say it's like a top 10 shot for me, but I think it would be in contention for like a top 50 shot or top 100 shot for me in film, when Maxine goes swimming in the lake and she's trying to swim back to the dock, and you just have that flat overhead shots of her swimming and the alligator following her. And the tension of that, and the cut then to the low shot of the dock and her coming forward to it, and you just see like the dock in the foreground, her in the midground, and the alligator in the background coming closer. Such beautiful shots, and it's so intense, but the way it's shot is quiet and unsettling, and you know she'll probably get out of the water, but it's beautiful. And I love that overhead shot. It looks like a painting.
Yeah, it's really cool. And a shot that's enriched by Pearl, I would say, and Pearl's connection with the Gators.
Yeah.
I think so. I agree that shot is very pretty, but to me it gains like meaning, like it gains character with Pearl sitting next to it.
I feel like Pearl's use of the alligator was a lot more anticlimactic. So it definitely adds to it, but it didn't do as much for me. It could have done more. Like, I was almost, what Pearl did with the alligator definitely adds, but I was almost just disappointed in how little the alligator got to do in Pearl.
I guess so, but to me, it worked in as a characterizing kind of thing. Like, she wants to become this monstrous thing. Like, she wants to exhibit this kind of power, and she uses it for a while, and then she like crushes the egg and like kind of takes a step over the alligator, and then has the confidence to start killing actual people.
But that part is cool.
Yeah. I will say in Pearl, the maybe my favorite moment was just like, I enjoyed Pearl again more as a genre affair and as like a comedy. So like the part I thought was the funniest and like made me giggle with excitement and enjoyment was when her sister-in-law is like trying to leave the house and Pearl's like, by the way, like, congratulations on getting the part. And the girl's like, I didn't get the part. She's like, you don't have to lie to me. I know you got the part. And she keeps like pushing her. She's like, I didn't get the part. And she goes, don't lie to me. And forces this girl to lie and say she got the part, which then leads to her death. Yeah. I just thought that was a great like piece of comedy, like as far as the timing and like what you know it's setting up. It's so good.
Yeah. No, that is pretty like funny because, right, it's pushing this thing. It's like driving her to this fate that she shouldn't get. Like,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
Pearl's just like essentially making her lie to justify murder. And what a thing that is.
Fuck those judges in the church too. Like, we're looking for someone blonde. Like, that's not, put that in the press release. Don't make someone who is, you know, auburn hair come there and try out if you're not going to pick them.
I know. They were dicks.
Yeah. And I think my favorite moment in X still, like, the first time I saw the movie, it was the moment I was like, oh, like, it kind of made me like fall in love with it, was the whole landslide scene.
Oh yeah.
With Kid Cudi on the guitar, fuck yeah, and Brittany Snow singing, like, what a combo. Those two should make an album together. But I've always loved that song and how it's about like looking up at this landslide and thinking like it could crash down on you and like everything could end in that moment. It's all about kind of living your life and living in the moment. And I think that's it kind of like helped X coalesce a little bit for me in a way. Like, oh, we have these people who are living in the moment. Like, they're making their art now. Like, they're doing something meaningful, as opposed to like Pearl and Howard are kind of like trapped in something and never expanded themselves. It's such an important part of the movie. And I thought that scene, which is so beautifully shot and beautifully sung, like it's just so perfect in what it's doing.
Yeah. I mean, first, you know, Brittany Snow in Pitch Perfect was awesome.
Yeah.
So her getting to sing again and then with Cudi. Yeah. I was at a concert in 2009, I believe it was 2010, when Cudi released Man on the Moon 2.
Yeah.
And it was Kent State. I've told this on our other podcast before.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard it outside of the podcast, but go on.
Yeah, when Cudi was performing, he started telling us about how he was trying to learn the guitar. And he actually played the song Marijuana. And he's like, I'm playing the guitar on this one. And he played it. And he's like, I want to keep playing the guitar, and played Marijuana again.
Love it.
So he was really obsessed with the guitar, but that was at the very beginning of it, and you could still see him getting used to it and like picking notes. Not every note was, you know, right or good, and yet here he is all these years later, like a genuine guitar player.
Yeah,
like, go Cudi.
Absolutely.
But Landslide, what makes that scene, I could see people saying it's a little on the nose. Like, I complain in Interstellar when we get the Dylan Thomas poem, Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night,
mm-hmm.
and how on the nose it is, especially with the dramatic Michael Caine reading, like, do not go gentle in that good night, rage against the dying of the lights. So many people thought that scene was powerful, and I thought it was horrible.
Yeah.
So I could see people thinking Landslide was a little on the nose, because you have the age thing going on, right? The dichotomy between the young and the old. And you have this song that's like, even children get older and I'm getting older too. That's really highlighting that as a theme. But it's fucking cool.
Yeah. Love it.
Mm. Especially asking that question, what is love, in a movie that is about sexuality and is getting into sex as just something that people do versus sex for passion.
Yeah, right.
And sex as a need. There's a whole lot of cool stuff around that as well.
Yeah, it's just, again, I mean, we've said it several times, but like when I talk about Pearl, like there's sort of just one thing to talk about. Like, it's doing the one thing really well, but it's just kind of the one thing where, like, X, I could sit here all day talking about everything X is doing.
I know. There's so many cool things.
And every performance is fantastic, too.
Yeah. Hopefully Maxine is that good.
I'm pretty excited. That's one thing I really love about X is, and I already mentioned it, but, like, giving the style of filmmaking the credit it's due. Like, pornographic films, exploitation films, these movies that are just seen as, like, low budget, lesser than kind of productions, when really it's not about the production value necessarily, but more like what the movies are going for and, like, what they're trying so hard to say. Like, there's a quality to those kinds of movies that is so endearing and watchable for me and refreshing compared to, like, you know, just when every movie feels like it's following the same kind of narrative beats and structure and all that. Like, I love that he's giving those movies their due.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what he does with the next one.
Maxine with three X's.
It also makes me really curious. I never watched In the Valley of Violence.
That's the only Ty West movie I haven't seen.
I'm curious with how, like, major of a step up it felt like X was from, I mean, I had only seen The Sacrament, but it felt like a huge step up.
Yeah, right.
I wonder if In the Valley of Violence is kind of an interesting middle ground for that, to where you can see him experimenting with some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'd be interested too. I don't know why I've never seen it. I have a friend who owns it too, and he was like, "Do you want to watch this?" And I was like, I don't know. I did have just a little bit of a personal fallout with Ty West after The Sacrament. Like, it didn't live up to, like, to me, his movies are transcendent, and, like, The Sacrament wasn't. So I was, like, scared to step back in. But I do want to watch it.
Yeah. Okay. Ranking.
Let's rank it.
I forgot about that part.
Oh, yeah. So I have it. Oh, well, I guess we got two movies here. X belongs in the superb section for me. That's the third highest I go. I have it ranked at number 121 out of 545 movies. And I got to go over the movie sandwich really quick. So at the top, we have All Hallows Eve, which is the precursor to Terrifier 2 and Terrifier.
Oh, wow.
It's our introduction to Art the Clown. Then Mandibles, which is a Quentin Dupieux movie. He's a French director who makes very, like, ridiculous comedies. If anyone doesn't know his movies, you should definitely check them out. He made Rubber, which I think is his most well-known movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is about a killer tire.
Tire.
they're very ridiculous. Mandibles is about these... It's basically... it's Dude, Where's My Car? Kind of. Like, it's these two, like, stoner idiots, and they come across a giant fly, and they don't know what to do with this fly. So their idea is that they're going to train the fly to rob banks.
Awesome. And
that's really all you need to know about that movie. then X, then Resident Evil Afterlife. I just have to say, quick side note here, I have awesome taste in movies. And then The Return of the Living Dead, which is a fantastic zombie movie that does not get enough love.
I love the fact that this is your third highest tier, and it's filled with these, like, insane...
Oh, man.
Genre movies.
Yeah, that was weird. I try to, like, piece together the movie into, like, a nice, interesting movie sandwich. I didn't even think about that one.
That one was wild.
Okay, and then Pearl. I have it in the section below, the very good section. I really enjoy it, but just not at that level. So at the top, we got Hanover Square, which is an old film noir about a dude who is struggling with alcohol addiction, which is what a lot of film noirs are about. Terror at Ten Killer, which is a pretty, pretty nasty old horror movie from the 80s. That's a good one. Then Pearl. What About Bob? What About Bob's great. And then The Big Sleep, another film noir.
It's like you forgot about What About Bob. And then as you said the name, the movie flashed into your mind.
Yeah.
And it was just a genuine, like, oh, yeah, that movie.
Man, I used to not like that movie, but my wife grew up loving it, and like when we watch it, she knows every line, and like her dad says all the lines in the movie all the time, so I've just like grown to love it because of that.
Nice. I forgot.
I have it at 247, by the way. I don't think I said that.
No, I don't think you did. Which is close,
right in the middle.
Yeah, to the halfway point, right?
Yeah, pretty close to the halfway.
I'm up to 192 movies. Is that right? 193 movies. I have to put Jurassic Park on here.
Oh, I wonder where that one will go.
Goes into the my favorites. And then I have to add Magnolia too. Oh, that'll be interesting to think about where that's going.
Number four on mine.
Whew. So I have X in the wow category, which is my second highest. And I just have each tier in alphabetical order. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
it's at the bottom.
It's at the bottom of the tier. But some of the others in this tier are Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Zone of Interest, Barbarian, and Avatar Way of Water.
Nice.
And then I have Pearl, which might be surprising, but I have Pearl in the neutral category, which is essentially like a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
So some of the ones around Pearl are Infinity Pool, another Mia Goth film.
Oh, yeah.
Koi Niskatsi. Have you ever seen Koi Niskatsi?
I haven't. It's always been on my list.
I thought I was going to love it, and I was so bored the entire time. But it does have a cool song where they're just like, Koi Niskatsi. But
I love when songs just say the name of the movie.
Yeah, over and over. The name has a meaning. I'm forgetting what it is right now, which is actually kind of interesting and frames what you're seeing and makes it even more interesting. But it's like the stuff being shown never really... It didn't pop for me. Anyway.
Yeah, sure.
Scream? The six, like the remake, Scream 5, whatever it was.
Because I was about to scream at you.
Yeah. I do have Terrifier 2 in here.
That's okay. It's not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah. And Sonic the Hedgehog 2, you know?
I mean, you were complimenting my movie sandwich. That's one hell of a movie sandwich.
Yeah, I have Terrifier 2 and Chippendale's Rescue Rangers in the same.
The fact that you've even seen these movies is maybe the most interesting part.
What, you ever watched Chippendale Rescue Rangers?
I only want to watch it to support David Cross.
Oh, really?
Isn't he in all the Alvin? Oh wait. Oh, I'm thinking of Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah.
He's in those movies, and I know there's some quote of like, "Yeah, I paid for the pool at my house," and he's just like open, like, "I don't give a shit. I'll sell out and make a bunch of money from these stupid movies." I support him.
Yeah, Chip and Dale's. It's John Mulaney. That's and. Right. Why can't I remember his
Not
name?
Nick Kroll.
Brooklyn 99.
Oh, why am I blanking on his name? I love him and I Love You, Man.
He's in I Love You, Man?
You mean the main character of Reno 911?
Brooklyn 99.
Oh, Brooklyn 99, my bad. Well, I do want to give a shout out to that guy because he's awesome. Even though I can't remember his name. Andy Samberg?
Andy Samberg, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I was thinking of Thomas Lennon.
Okay, yeah, it's John Mulaney and Andy Samberg, which yeah. I think you'd enjoy Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
I don't think I would enjoy that movie.
It's crazy to me. You enjoy so many other movies.
I just have a huge... Until I'm forced to watch those kinds of animated movies with my kids, like I'm definitely the least interested in those kinds of movies.
Did you ever watch Chippendale Rescue Rangers as a kid?
No. I mean, I have memories of that show. Like, I know what it looks like, but I wasn't a fan of it as a kid.
See, that explains it. That explains it. You have no nostalgia.
But I don't want to go watch a Pokemon movie either.
I watched the Pokemon movie. I did not like it.
I don't know. I just, cartoons. I just, like, I'm not interested.
Crazy. Wild.
Like, even Pixar stuff, I'm like, I just can't bring myself to care.
Would you watch Sonic the Hedgehog?
No.
Interesting, because I feel like that's another one that you'd probably... Maybe you wouldn't.
Huh. I mean, that's probably a little better because Jim Carrey's in it and everything, but still, that energy, that whole aesthetic, I don't know, it doesn't speak to me.
Not up your alley. That's how I felt about Ready Player One.
Spielberg.
I know,
it's crazy to me that's a Spielberg movie.
I know. I mean, but also...
Well, I haven't seen it, so I don't know what that statement even means.
It's just very Spielbergian.
Oh, okay, then.
But I don't think it has like a complicated parent-child storyline. Huh. So maybe not.
All right, Chris, what movie are we watching next?
Oh, I get to pick.
You sure do.
I realized that it would have been last week... This episode would have been a good time for a previous movie that we almost picked. I keep wanting to go back to it. I've just been wanting to watch it. It's not one that's on our website yet.
Could be soon.
It's I apologize for the length of this movie, but we're gonna finally do Any Given Sunday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course. Lauren, we were going to watch this movie for another episode. We even said we were going to do it, but then we didn't.
Yeah.
Lauren's been excited to watch it, so I'm happy to watch Any Given Sunday.
Yeah, it would have been good for Super Bowl week.
Well, you know, we'll do it 2 weeks after the Super Bowl.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. We should have done a Valentine's Day episode. I guess there's a love story in Pearl and X.
Yeah, that's kind of like Valentine's-y, right?
Sure.
Well, I saw a post earlier on Letterboxd. It was saying the most popular movies for Valentine's Day. And it was just like, is My Bloody Valentine a movie?
Yeah.
That was the number one. And just a bunch of horror movies. It was just all horror movies.
I will say my wife and I are going to watch the movie Valentine's Day tonight, which I argue is a good movie.
Okay, this is it. Most obsessively rewatched films on Valentine's Day, according to Letterboxd. You ready?
Yeah.
My Bloody Valentine, Valentine, Valentine's Day, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, I get that.
My Bloody Valentine, Gone Girl.
Wait, is the remake number one or number two?
The original is number one. The remake is number five.
And then you said Gone Girl?
Yeah, Gone Girl.
Okay.
When Harry Met Sally,
mm-hmm.
Casablanca, 500 Days of Summer, and Sonic the Hedgehog.
People can do better than this. There are better movies to watch on Valentine's Day.
I'm pretty sure this image that's used for the background of the photos, is that from Mad God or is that from My Bloody Valentine?
What if number one was Mad God?
That would be amazing. I'd love for more people to see Mad God. I just sent you the image. Tell me that can't be Mad God. That has to be something else.
Let me pull it up.
It's definitely My Bloody Valentine.
I assume it's not Mad God. Yeah, no, that's My Bloody Valentine. Although that looks like the remake.
Okay. But it also looks like the guy from Mad God, right? The little explorer dude.
It does look like him. I'm going to make some quick Valentine's... I know no one's made it this far, but some quick Valentine's Day recommendations. I know Chris will back this one up. Tropical Malady. Chungking Express. Wuthering Heights. Ticket to Paradise. Don't sleep on Ticket to Paradise. That was my favorite movie. Well, it was my favorite movie of 2022 until I saw Terrifier 2. I don't know. Those are all good. Out of Sight, George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez. There's a lot of good options out there that are all better than everything you just heard.
Groundhog Day. It's not a Valentine's Day movie, but it's February.
That's a great one. There's a romance in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We're at the end. The controversial end of the show. Everybody's talking about it, writing about it. Variety did a big expose on the end of our show the other day. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
So I don't even have to tease it. We all know what's coming here.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Okay.
Lights.
Camera.
See ya.
See ya.
See ya. Bye.
sign up.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.